Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And very pleased to be with you on this Monday. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined by the head basketball coach at Bucknell, Dave Paulson. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Well, good to be on the show, Steve.
All right, Temple is the opening round assignment. Obviously, they've got to overcome the disappointment of not getting in yesterday. But for you, what have you done in the interim to balance out time off with basketball time? Because I think you had spring break last week on campus.
Yeah, we had spring break. So we practiced really hard Tuesday and Wednesday. Gave the guys a couple days off Thursday and Friday. So a number of them could get home, that live, within a 2-3 hour radius. And we practice Saturday and Sunday, not knowing who we're going to play, and then we'll practice this afternoon and tomorrow in preparation for Temple.
What have you been able to garner on them in a short period of time?
Well, they are a terrific defensive team. Their defensive numbers are absurd. In every category, they're athletic. They don't give up second shots. They don't give up transition. They challenge everything. They're very athletic, so they're very good in transition offensively on the glass. And we haven't seen this level of athleticism or size for a good couple of months, for sure.
And now, but the flip side of that is that for whatever reason, his team is not a very good shooting team. So when you look at them offensively, where are they challenged offensively? Why have they been a minus 40% basketball team offensively?
Well, I think one thing is, just watching, I'm about almost through my third game watching, their last 3-4 games. And without knowing the ins and outs, they were not a good defensive team last year. And I think Coach Nuffy said, hey, we're going to rebuild our culture on the defensive end, and they have done that exceptionally well. But when you exert so much effort defensively, sometimes it takes a little bit out of you shooting-wise. The other thing is, just watching the games in the American Athletic Conference, that is a league full of terrific defensive teams. So, there's no easy looks there. I think they've got guys who are all capable of shooting the ball really well, and they've probably been a little bit streaky over the course of the year. And they don't, as of yet, I don't want to jinx this, they haven't had just a go-to low post scorer. So they get a lot of their baskets in the paint off dribble penetration and off offensive rebounds, but they haven't yet, and hopefully they won't, established a really dominant low post scoring threat.
A guy that missed 10 games for them and is back and playing now is Jesse Morgan. So when you look at number three on tape, how's he made them better?
Well, he's their best long-range shooter, and he missed 10 games, and he has 15 more made three-point baskets than the next best shooter. And so they have a dynamic point guard in Will Cummings. They have a really dynamic kind of wing player in Quentin Dicosi, but probably teams could sag in a little bit, but you can't leave Morgan open. And so that obviously gives them that perimeter threat, but it also gives a little more space for two of the most dynamic guards we've seen all year in Cummings and Dicosi.
You've been down this road before as a coach. What do you want to impart to your players about this time of the year and one-and-done basketball?
Well, just control the things you can control, and you want to make Temple make earned baskets, and if they can do it for 40 minutes, then they'll deserve to beat you. But don't beat yourself, so don't give up transition baskets. Don't let them get deep penetration off the dribble. keep them off the offensive glass, and then take care of the ball. You know, they lead the league in steals in the American Athletic Association. So, you know, we got to get a decent shot at the basket. And if we make them, or, you know, maybe we miss a few in a row, but if you just stay the course and make it all be earned baskets, then you're going to have a shot to beat anybody.
What kind of tempo, idealistically, would you like to establish in this game?
In the 30s. No, you know what?
Georgia State, Georgia Southern.
Yeah, no, listen. Somebody asked me, too, by the way. They said, if you knew you were going to win your tournament game, going into the tournament, and you knew you'd rupture your Achilles in the post-game celebration, would you sign up for it? I'm like, absolutely. I would sign up for it in a heartbeat. 40, 36, 90 to 20, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
You know, it's a fine line because Temple is not a great half-court execution team. See, you don't want to let them get going in transition. You know, they're beating, you know, the game against Memphis in the conference tournament. They really got their running game going, and then that got them making threes in their game against UConn here that I'm watching now. They get their running game going, and that springs them to victory. So you don't really want to get in a running game with them, and yet they're so good defensively in the half court that you have to take some opportunities when you get an open look. So it's really requires a great feel for the flow of the game, and that's, you know, putting a little bit of a burden on a freshman point guard in Stephen Brown, but that's what he's going to have that feel. And then obviously Stephen Casper off the bench, you know, is a little more veteran. Just knowing when to push it and when to pull it out and get deep into possession.
I had asked you this last week, but I'll ask the question again. This is going to be a tournament with a 30-second shot clock in it, which means, you know, the ability to, quote, reduce the game number of possessions. Not going to be greatly enhanced, but it still is, it's something that's not going to be as great a possibility. What are your thoughts on the 30-second clock?
Well, I'll tell you what, we've practiced with it now for four or five practices with the 30-second shot clock. And when I talked to you a week ago, I didn't think it would be that significant. It's significant, you know, because for us, we have a call when the shot clock gets under 10 so that we know we're in a shot clock. And you know, our players have to be aware of that and recognize and communicate to their teammates. And that call has been made more in the last 5 days of practice than probably, you know, the rest of the season combined. So, you know, you got to get to offense quicker. And, you know, I do think it'll improve the pace a little bit, you know. For this game, that may or may not be to our liking. But probably in the general good of the game down the road, it'll probably be a beneficial change if they go ahead and make that.
Yeah, they're about two more possessions per game than you are on the season, right around there. Doesn't sound like a lot, but in close games, that does make a difference.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. You know, it's two more chances. You know, we're going to give up, you know, a lot of positions, 3 or 4 inches and probably 30 pounds and maybe a couple seconds in the 40-yard dash. So, you know, every, you know, an extra couple of possessions gives that level of athleticism more opportunity to shine. So, you know, we want to control the pace as much as we can.
And by the way, I give you better than even odds. You can beat Dump in a 40-yard dash. So
I could maybe beat Dump because he's got a couple of years on me, but that might be it. But I'd be liable to rupture my Achilles like the coach of Georgia State, and I'm only going to do it if we're going to the NCAA tournament.
Exactly. How interested are you in big picture to see how the kids react to this? I'm going to talk about the young ones you're going to have back.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we want to win this game, and we want to advance, and we want to have our eyes set on, you know, I think we can, you know, we had Villanova on the ropes early in the season and probably should have won that game, and they're a number one seed in the country. And so we told our guys, hey, this is a number one seed. We should have beaten them. We can beat anyone. Right. And then, obviously, we've lost to some teams that, quite frankly, weren't that good. Our focus is on winning this game, without a doubt. But the corollary of it is we do want to see how our guys respond. The all but the three seniors who are going to be coming back, and we want this to be something for its own intrinsic value of the NIT, but also springboard. We want to be playing the other tournament next year. And right. And we want to figure out what we need to do to get over the so-called hump, and how you handle a more physical, more athletic team, how you handle adversity, will speak volumes in terms of us moving forward.
Dave, have you seen a foundation of leaders among underclassmen that you have seen develop that you think moving forward will be what you're looking for?
Yes, I have. Ryan Frazier is a junior captain. He's been a really good leader all year and a phenomenal leader in the last month. I think he's really kind of stepped that up. And then I think, we got some other juniors and sophomores who I think as the seniors graduate will kind of transition into bigger leadership roles. And I would say our freshman class, in addition to being really good players, they have big personalities. They will be not only, I think, significantly improved moving forward, at least that's our hope, but I think they'll have a bigger impact in terms of the personality of the team as they're more experienced and they understand kind of the ins and outs of the season.
Well, I think it's an exciting opportunity for you. I think it's great that you're going to be in postseason. I know you want the four-letter tournament, not the 30-letter one, but I wish you nothing but the best down at the Elite Corps Center on Wednesday night.
All right, thanks, Steve.
All right, thanks, Dave. Dave Paulson, head basketball coach at Bucknell. It's a great opportunity for them because they'll go down there. They actually match up pretty well with this team in a lot of areas, and they're motivated. The question is, in the opening round, what are the keys in the NIT? Without question, and I've done enough NIT NITs in my lifetime. And the one thing I've noticed is early motivation is very important. If you can get past the first round, the second round then becomes interesting because both teams have a good feeling. There is not a team in the NIT, none of them, that have a good feeling going into the NIT. Why? Because all 32 teams lost their last game. All 32 of them lost their last game. So it's the team that is motivated and juiced and set to go and feels that this is important. It increases their chances exponentially in the opening round. Because remember, it is a tournament. You have 32 teams in the NCAA tournament that are going in on winning streaks. You have 36 that are going in off of losses. And in the NIT, you have all 32 going in with a loss. There isn't one team, not one team, ever enters the NIT on a winning streak. There's a reason you're in the NIT. So it's which team can generate emotion for the moment that gives them a little bit of an advantage in that opening round. Now, once you get past the opening round, things then change. All 16 teams in the second round, all 16 of them, are coming off a win. And now you are engaged in the tournament. That is a big difference. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Marcus Reed in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Dave Paulson, the basketball coach at Bucknell, always takes the time to carve out time for us. We'll have Joe Susan, the head football coach, on later in the week to talk about spring practice for Bucknell coming up. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, joining us on Wednesday this week. Also, Jeff Byers from the NCAA Wrestling Championships to preview it for us in St. Louis later in the week as well. Our number 800-795-9565, you'd like to jump in and get your thoughts. It's amazing what the Philadelphia Eagles have done. The Eagles have been remarkable, and the Philadelphia Daily News had a great picture the other day, and Dick showed it to me. The front cover said, Hail Murray. So they get DeMarco Murray from the Cowboys, and the headline was great because underneath it said, Murray helps running game in Philadelphia. He's no longer a Dallas Cowboy, and he makes Chris Christie upset, the big three. That's what he's able to do. Now, Sam Bradford, now with him. In the NFL is not a trade league. There are very few trades made in the National Football League. That's why when Jerome Bettis, for example, came over from St. Louis to Pittsburgh, a rare NFL trade. Percy Harvin last year from Seattle to the Jets, a rarity, a trade. Well, now you have trades, a couple of trades being made, and Chip was right in the middle of it, and you don't have quarterbacks dealt for each other often. I mean, geez, one of the few times I can remember that happening was also the Eagles when they dealt Sonny Jurgensen to the Redskins for Norm Snead. So it's rare when it does happen, and Kelly brings a little different mindset. This is a league that is a draft, free agent, waiver league. It's not a trade league, and yet they've made trades and moves. And are the Eagles a better team than they were before? I think they are. The Murray pickup is exponentially big. Now you flip it to the other side of the state, and the Steelers had a really good week last week as well. Let's start with the D'Angelo Williams signing. That's exactly the kind of guy. Remember the list I gave you? I gave a list of three guys I thought the Steelers should go after, and one of them was not Reggie Bush. And D'Angelo Williams was the number one choice I had in there. Why? Well, he's exactly the kind of guy I think that fits in with what they're trying to do. In all likelihood, Le'Veon Bell will have a one, and in all likelihood, I would guess a two-game suspension to start the season. A guy like Williams can step in and he can fill that void right away for you. Then once Bell gets back, Williams can then be a spot role player for you. Bush, on the other hand, has always been a combination of a halfway between a full-time player and a spot player. Bush has always been halfway between the two. Well, that's difficult to do in Pittsburgh because if you want to bring him in as a regular back, Bell's better than he is. If you want to use Bush out of the backfield as a pass receiver, Bush is very, very good, but Bell's actually better. And when it comes to blocking and blitz pickup, there aren't many running backs in the NFL that are better than Le'Veon Bell. So Reggie Bush really was a poor man's Le'Veon Bell, and there really was no area to fit him in. D'Angelo Williams, different story. I think he's exactly what they did. I think that was a really good signing by Pittsburgh. You know, he's going to be a guy that's going to help them win a couple games here and there. He's not going to be a star. He's just going to be a guy that gives Bell a break here and there, and you're not going to feel like you're going to lose a lot when he's out there. Now, if you put him out there for 20 to 30 carries in a game, you're not going to get the same production as Bell. But if you spot him here and there, and especially in the first two games of the season, he's going to help them. The other part was signing Ben Roethlisberger for 5 years. Franchise quarterbacks do not grow on trees. They just don't. And that's why you see Tampa Bay struggling with what to do, Tennessee struggling with what to do. The Jets are struggling with what to do. The Bears said, okay, we're going to keep Jay Cutler around. That's why you see teams making decisions like that all the time. It's the ones that have the franchise quarterbacks where the biggest decision is how many years can we sign him up for? The Steelers signed Roethlisberger for 5 years. It was a great move. They've got it done now. It's in the bag. And again, franchise quarterbacks, there aren't that many of them. If they were, all 32 teams would have one. The Steelers have one. And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. A couple quick notes, and we'll kind of knock it around a little bit. Of course, we talked about the Eagles and the Steelers in the last break. You can't talk enough about the NFL. You can't. The NCAA basketball tournament, we've also talked about Penn State basketball. It's a big step forward the way they play down the stretch. You know, and Patrick Chambers has done, you know, I mean, this is only Penn State's third winning season since 2001. We've only had three winning seasons since 2001. Three. 9-11 in this year. That's it. They had 1 year, was it six, where they went 15-15. They lost the opening game of the NIT, finished 15-16. But they've only had, since 2001, when they made the run to the Sweet 16, they've had three winning seasons. This was the third one. They went 18-16 this year. And again, it's amazing the confidence that one shot could have. If that shot had taken place a month earlier, I think the conference record would have been different for Penn State. And I think they would have had seven, maybe eight conference wins before it was all over with, and a different feel as to what was going on around here. The TV situation, it was interesting. I saw Ed Sherman of the Chicago Tribune, who also writes his own blog, in a long, deep conversation with Jim Nance at the Big Ten tournament, because Jim Nance did the semifinals and he did the finals. And I have no idea what they were talking about, because I did, you know, even at one point they were standing next to me in the runway and I was getting ready to go out. Well, I had to go out. I wasn't going to eavesdrop on what they're talking about. But Ed Sherman wrote a very thoughtful column about the TV situation for the Big Ten. And the Big Ten is going to have its TV deal expire at the end of the 16-17 basketball season. So it's 2 years away. Now they're going to be heating up the negotiations very quickly. Now this is what the Big Ten has right now. What they have is they have ESPN and the tiered of networks for football and basketball. They have obviously the Big Ten Network, which is everything, especially football and basketball. And that's a 25-year agreement that pays $2.8 billion that runs through 2032. So that's not on the table, obviously. They have a deal with CBS that runs through 2017 for the semifinals and finals of the Big Ten tournament. They have the championship game contract with Fox that runs through as well. So they're on different tiers, different platforms. Now, here's one of the issues. Fox Sports obviously is looking for a signature college property. They thought they had that for FS1 when it came to the Big East. Well, this is where Jim Delaney becomes very interested. It's not playing out the way FS1 had hoped. An average Big Ten game on ESPN draws 1.2 million viewers for basketball. An average Big East game on FS1 draws 90,000. That's something to be taken into consideration here. But here's something else that I did not realize until Ed Sherman put it out in his column. Only five Big Ten football games were on ESPN last year. You're sitting back saying, no, that's impossible. That's impossible. Hear me out. I'm talking about ESPN. ESPN2 has the Big Ten package every week at noon. 3:30 is always the regional game. And that regional game is, it's a portion of the country that sees it. Now, our portion of the country gets to see Penn State. And the same thing regionally, it's usually a split one on ABC at night, as to, you know, because usually a couple games going on. The Big Ten actually only had 5 games on ESPN last year, outside of the college football playoff, of course. Now, the perception would be that, oh, yeah, they're on ESPN left and right. Well, ESPN2 and ESPNU are where you found the other Big Ten games this year, and ABC. So that's something where they, you know, where I think that becomes a concern. ESPN is so powerful now that you really do have to find a way to be on it. Let's take the Pac-12 as an example. The Pac-12 has the Pac-12 network, and they have a deal with Fox, but they also have an ESPN package, so it's multi-tiered. And in my estimation, that's what you're going to see with the Big Ten. It's going to become a multi-tiered package. I think there may be some participation by Fox Sports somewhere for some games, unless Jim Delaney can carve out a permanent ESPN spot for games. And the Pac-12 finally was not on ESPN, and the Pac-12 did not get a lot of run, even though they'll say on game day, hey, look, you know, we treat everybody equally and so forth. Yeah, I mean, I think there's an attempt to. But there's also an out-of-sight, out-of-mind feeling. It's not deliberately you look and you snub the Pac-12, but you don't see them as often. They're not on your network. Well, you notice now the Pac-12 in the last couple of years has been on ESPN. They put together a new contract and got themselves into that Thursday night, Friday night time slot, and also the late night time slot on ESPN at, what, 10:15 or something like that. So that's something where I did not realize that only 5 Big Ten football games were on ESPN this year. 5. And that has to be in consideration for what the Big Ten's going to do with their package. So just take that, file it away. Thought I'd pass that along because it affects what you do. And again, fewer and fewer people are actually, I mean, among young people, 18 to 34, they're not, you know, they're watching on their devices. They're fewer and fewer watching TV. But it's what you watch, and you know, let's face it, I mean, you're like, you know, a lot of you are like me, you watch the games on TV. That's why this time, for the first time in 51 weeks, I'm going to watch something on True TV. Why? Because the NCAA basketball tournament's on True TV. So for the first time in 51 weeks, I'm going to watch something on True TV. All right, now the NCAA tournament. What I find interesting is the NCAA tournament, and I think as you well know, you've listened to the show now, it's our 4th year doing this show. And we try to come prepared with all sorts of stuff. Everyone knows that listen to the show, I've never gambled a dime in my life. I think waking up every day is a gamble for me, but I haven't gambled a dime in my life. But I also realize that people do, whether it's I mentioned that, you know, Sarah talked about the innocent office pool earlier. Yeah, okay. That's certainly, you know, a lot of people get involved in that, but there are other people that put down legit money. I mean, like, big money to do something like this. And it's a real struggle for the NCAA when it comes to this because, look, I mean, let's face it. Your interest becomes greater when you have a stake in what's going on. And it's real. And the NCAA struggles with this. Now, I think they should struggle more with what to do with Syracuse and North Carolina. But then again, that's a conflict of interest. For the next 3 weeks, according to gaming industry estimates, 40 million Americans are going to gamble more than $2 billion on the outcome of the tournament. $2 billion on the tournament. And hey, let's face it, it's like fantasy football. Kevin talks about this all the time, that he's interested in other games now because he wants to see how his fantasy player is doing, why he has a stake in what's going on. Television revenue, of course, is way up. $9 million in 80, $64 million in 90, $228 million in 2000, $634 million in 2010. The office pool, by the way, I should point out, is outlawed in much of the country. So, Sarah, you're wrong. But go ahead and do it anyway.
We're going to try our best to, you know, keep it under the table here. It's okay.
I'm just trying to keep you on the right side of the law, Sarah.
I know.
It's what I do. Keep you on the right side of the law.
Work production goes down. It all goes down.
You know, I always laugh about that work production stuff. You know what having a little fun does? I think it makes you more productive. Now, there may be time that you take away from doing something else, but it's okay in life to have a little bit of fun. It's all right. Want to be the nose of the grindstone crew? Go ahead, be the nose of the grindstone crew. Yeah, go home and kick the dog. But, but have some fun. It's all right. But the wagering on this is unbelievable as to where it is. And March Madness betting now tops the Super Bowl in overall money put down. Can you believe that? Now, there are more games, and it's dragged out over 3 weeks. That's the amazing part. The Super Bowl, of course, is the number one event for sports bettors. But again, this is something that takes place over 3 weeks. Gamblers legally wagered $93.9 million on the Super Bowl. Now, one thing you'll find out that in Las Vegas, and I pointed this out maybe a month ago on football, they don't differentiate between, when they tell you how much money is wagered, they do not differentiate between college and pro. It's all in one pool. But I'll give you an example. 2011, gamblers wagered $256.6 million on college and pro basketball in March versus $114 million in February. Oh, and by the way, there was a drop in basketball wagering to $78 million in April. All right? This is a very intelligent audience. 2 + 2 = We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Attention, pencil.
All right, down the stretch we come here. North Carolina and Syracuse, I don't know if you had a chance to see the E.L. Swift article on the North Carolina situation in this week's Sports Illustrated. Well worth the read. Where you have people openly saying, hey, look, you know, when they won the 2005 national championship, we're all looking at each other saying, I wonder if they'll let us keep it. Really? That's how they talked about it. The problem that they have, they've had so many players in the same major or the same curriculum at North Carolina has caused a problem. I'll give you an example here at Penn State. They actually monitor and have for years what majors everyone's in, and if there's a cluster in one major, they make a point of it. This used to happen at Duke all the time. And believe it or not, one of the ways at Duke is a member of Shane Battier, they made such a big deal about him. He majors in religion. Like, hey, that really stuck out. Well, then when you start looking at everybody else majoring in the same thing. Not religion, but I don't even know what study or curriculum they were in. But they all seem to be, or the vast majority, were in the same major. Battier stuck out. He majored in religion. Hey, well, that's an interesting one to be majoring in. Okay. Well, here at Penn State, they monitor that. They don't want to have too many athletes all majoring in the same thing, and they monitor to make sure that they aren't. Yeah, you can choose whatever you want, but they don't want them being placed in something. And at North Carolina, this was the issue with the African American Studies program. They said that a lot of them were getting placed in there. Okay. And here's the problem the NCAA has with Syracuse and North Carolina. They can put the hammer down on USC football, the NCAA. Inexplicably, and of course we believe to be wrong, but they put the hammer down on Penn State football. Now, why can the NCAA do that and not think twice about it? Because the NCAA has no vested financial interest in NCAA football. The conferences are the ones that reap the money and the benefits of the TV contract. The NCAA is out of the television business when it comes to college football. But the basketball tournament is a completely different animal. The NCAA does have a vested financial interest in the basketball tournament. Heavy. 10 figures worth over the years of the contract. 10 figures. And let's face it, we could talk about, hey, you know, let's see what Stephen F. Austin's going to do. And they get an upset and Kevin gets all excited and the whole deal. But guess what? After the opening weekend, it does not translate ratings-wise. Once it gets to the Sweet 16 into the Final Four, Cinderella ratings-wise does not translate. The lowest rated Final Four game over the last 10 years was VCU and Butler, and by a wide margin. Once you get to that second weekend, the fans, based on name brand, want to see chalk. It's proven in the ratings. You want to see Kentucky. You want to see North Carolina. You want to see Syracuse. You want to see Duke. And you want to see Arizona. You want to see these teams. You want to see Virginia now. They've kind of like Wisconsin. You want to see Wisconsin. Well, it's really thrilling to watch Wisconsin get knocked out in the second round. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. Hey, what a tournament. And then when it gets to the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, you sort of miss them. North Carolina and Syracuse are two major brand names in college basketball that have helped reap ratings and have helped the NCAA get bigger and better contracts as a whole. So they're investigating Syracuse and North Carolina. Of course, they just came out with the Syracuse thing. But Syracuse, you know, they should have not only suspended Jim Boeheim for 9 games, but they also said for the next 3 NCAA tournaments you're out as a coach. Oh, your team can play it, you just can't coach it. But when they have a deep vested financial interest, does that inhibit their ability to put the hammer down on the program? I'm not going to give an answer to it. I think you know the answer to it. You can contemplate it for the next 24 hours. Sarah, great job. Great to have you with us. Today's show has been brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Marcus Reed in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. From the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK.